What have you been doing today? Perhaps you started out with a shower or cleaned your teeth. I hope so. Well, those everyday tasks might help you live a longer, happier life. I can see your skeptical face there, but cognitive neuroscientist Dr. Stan Rodsky says taking up woodwork or knitting or even colouring in can build a state of mindfulness, and that could lead to better health outcomes. Dr. Rodsky's new book is called The Neuroscience of Mindfulness. Welcome to you, Stan.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, and hello.
It's a pleasure. Now, before we get to brushing our teeth, we hear the term mindfulness bandied around a lot these days, and it's often associated with meditation or yoga. What exactly does it mean when you use it?
Okay, so you're quite right. It is often bandied around, and it is something that has generated itself out of the worlds of meditation, yoga, etc. It's a particular way of doing these things, which is about being in the moment, being able to set your mind on exactly what you're doing without judgment. And unfortunately, that's a difficult task for most of us. I was reflecting on this the other day, back to my own children, and I liken the way our brain operates to throw. I remember them throwing a Super Bowl in the shower. I don't know if your listeners remember a Super Bowl, but they were condensed rubber, and you bounced it, and it would bounce three times higher.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, if anyone's looking for a new business, that's one to bring back. And they would throw it in the shower, and it would, because they were young boys, and they would throw it in there, and it would just bounce away in there, and that's our brain. You know, it simply bounces away everywhere. We've had this lovely idea that our world is in there is sorted quickly, and parts of our brain immediately fire up, and then the next logical one fires up. But that's not what the evidence is showing us. This world of the Super Bowl in a shower versus the world of mindfulness, where we're actually bringing ourselves able to stop that ball for a moment or two.
We're basically hostages to our caveman brains, aren't we?
Look, we are. And it's a wonderful point in time that we're at. I love the, and look, if I reflect on this for a moment, the juxtaposition of the book title. Chaucer would have been proud of me. You've really got the West and new. Could you think of a more sciencey word than neuroscience?
Well, it's interesting too. Reading it, I was struck by the juxtaposition between the busy lives of the West and our society, and the idea that I would take more time brushing my teeth and do it without judgment, when usually I'm doing it in 30 seconds flat and thinking, "Have I covered everything?" Surface, you know.
Correct, and thinking about who you've got on today, what questions you're going to be asking, have you burnt the toast? There's a million things, and if that didn't help, you've also got your phone pinging away at you, usually from the beginning of the day. Are you going to be in? Are you going to be okay? This guest coming, this one is. It's a very, very different world that we've created here. It's wonderfully efficient in so many ways, but we've got a brain that hasn't actually caught up with this.
Yes, it still gets triggered by stressful events to release terrifying stress hormones. But Stan, I want you to walk us through the step-by-step of making, say, those daily tasks like brushing our hair or brushing our teeth a mindful experience, because I think that will give us the building blocks to be able to explore in greater depth what that can mean for us in the long term.
Yeah, so if you look at the sort of exercises that are in there, we're shutting the world outside for a moment. We're just saying, I'm actually now, let's focus on the brushing your teeth type thing. For a moment, just focusing on each task in its minutiae. In other words, I'm picking the brush up. I'm looking at the brush. I'm turning the tap on. I'm watching the water come out. I'm putting the toothpaste on. You know, and this dialogue that you're now in the moment. You're focused on it. And each of those steps is to the negation of the rest of the world at that moment. You know, you're not even, often you'll be thinking about what we dreamed about. Again, our brain is so busy at that stage. And so this task of mindfulness is about stopping. But the brain, now this is the key in here, is the moment at which you say to yourself, I want to do this.
So you're,
it's your intent.
Ah, so you're thinking about that task in a different way and also perhaps performing it in a different way.
Correct. In a non-judgmental way. How silly is this? Or, you know, I should be thinking about something in the future, or I'm thinking about something in the past. You know, 35 years as a psychologist, I can tell you the past predominates and the future infuriates. It just continues that this sort of antagonism that goes on in our brain, and it forgets the present.
I am a little worried about the idea of mindful driving. Tell us how we can do that safely.
Well, again, it's just a matter of slowing yourself down in the moment. Just being aware that you're, you know, obviously you have to drive and you have to, you know, keep your mind on things. But how often do you drive from A to B not knowing that you got there?
It's valuable, you know, thinking time, though. And
well, but if in fact you focused on the activities that are going on in there, even down to the feel of the steering wheel, just for a moment, the research would tell us that that actually actuates the brain so that you're more attentive to the things that are going on. We're building a world now of cars which will beep us, stop us, move us. You know, look in your rear vision mirror or in your side mirrors now, there's a light that tells you whether there's a car there or not. All of that sensory stuff that would have allowed us to be more focused and in the moment, really focused on, if we did that, we wouldn't be on our phones either, or pretending that we're not on our phones when we are on our phones. And we'd be like, oh, this is just, I'm just going to touch that button. It's just down there.
Now that we've got the mechanics under our belt of how we view these yes. tasks differently, let's look at what's happening inside the brain when we have that focus on a hobby or a task. What does the neuroscience say is happening to us?
Okay. Well, this wonderful old brain of ours, we think maybe in its present shape about 500,000 years, without too much variation on that. But it's basically operates from a neuroscience perspective as this circuit board. You know, it's charged up, and the circuit board then tells the chemical system, the endocrine, as it's technically called, what it has to release. So you've got this world in which two avenues of reaction for us in reality and non-reality. In other words, we can think of something and it'll just happen, and we can actually have something happen. But we'll have two reactions, an electrical one and a chemical one. The chemical one, we're all well versed in. Go to the pharmacist, get the meds, go to your doctor, you know, put that, you know, we can affect that system, but it hasn't always served us well. And it's this electrical system that neuroscience is about, the central nervous system, and in particular, the autonomic nervous system. That is exactly that word. It's automatic. It just beavers away all day long trying to keep you in balance. But we've, in the last, I would estimate the last 50 years, created a world it's never had to deal with. And it's continually on, continually buzzing, continually telling different parts of the brain what to do. And we have to actually learn how to control that. And we're doing that through brainwaves.
So what kind of brainwaves are we exhibiting when we stop buzzing around like a bee in a bottle and actually sit down and focus on
a
task?
We move into an alpha. When alpha waves, for those a little bit more technical, but I'll keep it, you know, sort of around the 15 cycles per second. So the brain actually has this electrical activity going on in it. And when we're at around 15 cycles per second, we're in alpha, we're in what we call relaxed mode. That's, you know, I can put all of your listeners into alpha right now. Close your eyes. Shut down the visual cortex, and the whole brain will go, whoa. Wait a minute, why am I no longer in my visual world, which is the beta world, where we're operating, you and I are operating right now at about 40 cycles per second. You're thinking of your next question, I'm thinking about the answer to it, you've got your timeline, I'd talk all day, you know, all of these sorts of things are going on. But being able to actually bring our brain back into an alpha state, which is the very state that we try to get into when we go to sleep, we shut our eyes.
Now, we're talking to Dr. Stan Rodsky, whose latest book is The Neuroscience of Mindfulness. And Stan, I think people listening will be very keen to hear about the tangible benefits that you say that mindfulness can bring. How does it help with the long-term impacts of stress on our bodies?
Yes, so if you think about a world in which we can actually break that cycle, One of the things that came through our research, particularly while I was working as a psychologist, was steady stream of executives, all stressed out. You know, how can I maintain my $1 million salary and stay employed? Okay, so they would in fact be looking to, and they would have all the stress symptoms. And that's true for all of us. You know, we have, if the brain doesn't break the cycle in terms of these brain waves, it will actually go to the chemical reaction. And the chemical reaction, of course, is to release cortisol. Cortisol's fine when you're ready to do something and activate. But if it stays in your system, that's the problem. We have to get it out. Mindfulness gets it out of the system. That's where the science actually proves itself.
So how strong is that? How clear is that causal link
in
the research?
It is very clear. There are so many studies now, including my own, where we just trailed this through. And we use some of these techniques. You can imagine trying to tell some people to use mindfulness. So I just got them to colour. Just colouring, hooked up to the various brain machines that we had in action then. And we could actually see the change in those brain waves, the change in the chemical reaction systems. It is good for us, and so much work is going. And I love the fact that here's the science behind the Eastern Way.
It's interesting, though, at one point in your book, you talk about the mind-body connection, and there's a lot of research done on the impact that can have on our health. But it sounds like only about 50% of participants actually benefited from those mind-body connection interventions. What's going on there?
Well, again, some things are not driven by the psychological system. Some things are about our biology. You know, they're about our genetics. They're about things that are going to happen to us because we've been structured that way in our biology. And so, but for 50% of people, there is a great opportunity there to actually affect, not necessarily remove things, although there's some interesting issues there, but certainly be able to curtail the development of them, keep us healthier longer.
Is that dangerously close, just finally, though, to blaming people who do get sick? You're not calm enough?
Well, again, I think that blame is a pretty tough word. We live in a world which just drives us along, and being able to actually stop for a moment and think about how I might change that a little to benefit me, I think, is outside of the blame territory, quite frankly.
It's been a very interesting discussion. Thank you, Stan, for coming on Life Matters.
Thanks, Hilary.
Dr. Stan Rodsky, a cognitive neuroscientist, and his new book is called The Neuroscience of Mindfulness. I'm Hilary Harper.